In the court of public opinion, I am sustained.
Winning arguments is easy. I prefer winning at life.
Literally perfect. Literally, we are all sustained. No overruled here, and that's all I know. And my dad was a litigator for 150 years. Guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode, we're in the 600s. We're in the 610s. We have some 610 energy. I know. Just been doing this for a little bit. Just been doing it for about a minute. But I am so excited for this episode. So welcome, first time technically to the podcast, although there is a little bit of an asterisk, which I will explain. Welcome to Andy's Girls, co-host of the Bravo Docket, an iconic podcast focused on two attorneys breaking down reality TV legal disputes, Angela and Gotti. Angela, how are we?
I am wonderful. It's Friday and I'm very excited about that. So doing good.
We have some Friday energy happening.
Friday energy for sure. Yes.
Yep. Extremely into. And also, so Ceci has been on the pod before. We recorded in person when I was in LA after BravoCon last year. But the three of us have also done an episode of Andy's Girls, which is one of, you know, we're 600 and whatever episodes in. I would say of 600, there are maybe, I don't know if this is accurate, maybe 5 or 10 lost episodes where something has gone terribly awry.
Yeah.
And so usually it's like rescheduled. It's almost always tech, which unfortunately happened with us. So we recorded an incredible episode, which, you know, just was for us. It was just an intimate moment, just of, you know, an oral friendship contract between three podcasters. So I'm so thankful, because we were talking about this before starting recording, but it is kind of like a bookend, as you said, because recording with Ceci, now having you, we kiki'd at BravoCon. I'm just so thrilled to have you on the pod. So welcome back.
Excited to be here. And we always have so much fun when we get to run into you at Bravo events. So
I mean, listen, I have to tell you, I was not mad when Bravo announced that they were, it was going to be a leap year situation, because I needed a minute after.
It was
Bravo.
Too much. It was. I mean, I loved it, but we said the same exact thing. And I think we even said it on our pod. We were like, we really love BravoCon, but every year is, that's a lot. You've got to, it's like how, you know, you should only really spend like 48 hours in Las Vegas, like Las Vegas, BravoCon, all of that at the same time. It's just so much. It's so overstimulating. You do need 2 years in between, to be honest.
You really did. You really do. And they did such an exceptional job with like the programming, design. Everything was literally perfect.
It was stunning.
Yeah.
It was stunning. Like when you like the, just all the little sets in different areas when you went in, and having it in Las Vegas was really kind of perfect. And you know, the tickets are expensive, but they put it, I mean, I hope they continue putting back into it. You know, like is, even the bathroom was in at the convention center was decorated in like Bravo themed things. I was impressed.
I was impressed. The only thing, though, is that it apparently will be once again held in Las Vegas, a place I had never been to nor ever interested in visiting until BravoCon was announced for, you know, what we
really
went to last year. Have never in my life ever been interested in going to Las Vegas, because it's just so deeply not my energy. There's just something that's so, I know that people love that it's like, and we're just talking the strip. So I know that there's a lot of culture to Vegas, but we didn't have access to that because we're only there for a couple days and it was jam packed. But like that heightened artificial saccharine sweet, but also people are literally mortgaging their houses and peeking all out while they're there. It was just, there was like a darkness to it. And also they were doing the F1 preparation for that race. So everything was locked down and it felt like we were in a prison complex. It was an intense, I was just kind of like, okay, got it. Okay, well, I'll see you guys, you know, the next time this happens, but then please never, please never again. It just wasn't for me. But also I'm not like rich. So I think if I was rich, I would probably have a different experience, but I would rather be rich in, you know, a real place. You know, like take me somewhere else. Take me somewhere else than this. Apologies.
I actually clerked there in Las Vegas for a whole summer. My first year of law school, my first semester, you know, my summer semester after law school. And I have family that lives there. And so I've seen a lot of Vegas area that, you know, most people don't visit. But I will say, and I love Las Vegas. I also love chaos. But I will say that when we were there, that's the first time they were having that F1 race in Vegas. And that made it a lot weirder. And I think they're going to get some of the kinks worked out. I am an F1 fan too for F1 this year. But I mean, even the people that were there for F1 were frustrated with how that was. That was also just a lot going on. It's like BravoCon, they're setting up for F1, and then Las Vegas in general. It's a lot.
Yeah, I'm an F1 convert through Drive to Survive. Like, I started to watch Drive to Survive, and I was like,
oh my God, I didn't know this about you. Wait, who is your favorite team? Who are your favorite drivers?
Not McLaren. There's something about, what's his face? Toto. Am I saying that right?
Toto.
Yeah.
That man can get it.
He is so fucking hot. And I do love, I love him. I love Lewis, who just seems like such a good person. And so, genuine.
Oh my God, I didn't hit his fashion too.
His fashion is incredible. His like social justice work is incredible.
Did you know he's one of the chairs of the Met costume ball this year?
For the upcoming, right?
Or for the upcoming one, yeah.
I don't doubt it. He deserves it. He deserves his spot.
So cool.
I also sort of genuinely hate Max. So it breaks my heart because I do think he's like the devil. And apologies. Like he's super, he's so successful, whatever. But I just don't fuck with him. I like don't like his energy. But then counter that with like Christian Horner, I think is a perfect villain. So I'm sort of obsessed with him. Because I love that. But also, wait, what's the name of the guy who I'm obsessed with who just got kicked out? Daniel. I love Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, Ricciardo. I was so upset because I went to F1 in Austin and that's his favorite track at COTA. And I was like, why isn't Danny Ricciardo here? Like, what is going on? Like, why couldn't they let him race there one last time? You know, that's his favorite race. I was excited to see him race in Austin. So...
I think he's my favorite, honestly. And also, what's the... Oh, Gunther from Haas. Love him. Love his energy.
Love him.
Hated when he got overtaken by the Russian oligarch and he was, like, attempting to not be in absolute hell every moment of the day. So who's your favorite? This is a sports podcast, obviously. who's your F1 driver? Who's your guy?
So I'm the Tifosi. I joined the Tifosi. I'm Team Ferrari. And I love... all of the drivers. Like I could not really pick a favorite one, but if I'm rooting for a team, it's Ferrari. Although I'm really upset that Carlos is leaving like Ferrari.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. So he's going to a different team. And I'm like, no, they're so perfect together. Like, I love the two of them together. Like, I love seeing all of them playing chess together on their plane and like all their little songs and stuff. So I was like, oh, man. But, the Ferrari men are my current favorites.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I have to pick one. Yeah. Yeah. But I can't totally hate someone that just loves cats as much as Verstappen does.
Oh. I get that. I understand that. I get, cat people do, they are united in their, in their catting. And I can I did write a piece, which you can find in the Daily Beast, comparing F1 drivers to Real Housewives. So if anybody is interested in the intersection.
I think I saw that.
Yeah. It was like, I don't even remember when it was. Was it last year? I couldn't tell you. Yeah. You can find it on the Daily Beast.
Wait, I'm Googling it right now.
If you search my name, you can find it because I started watching Drive to Survive. People had told me to watch it and I was like, I'm absolutely not doing that. I could give a fuck about any kind of car, let alone racing. And then the second I started, I was like, well, nobody told me it was excellent TV. That's how I don't give a shit about like, but now I do. Now I love that. Now I love golf.
Oh my God. This article, perfection. Okay, wait. We have to discuss this just a little bit because I've got to.
We can't. We have to talk outside. We can't.
I know, but like we can talk about it later, but we're going to have a separate conversation about this.
Yeah, I would be happy to deep dive. And also shout out to my editor, Kevin Fallon, because after the piece went up, I absolutely texted or emailed him and was like, you know what? I have to change one of the people because I was like matching housewives with drivers and team managers. And I was like, no. I got to change. You don't watch Drive to Survive, but I know in my heart that like this person needs to be with this person.
I know in my heart.
Truly nuts behavior. Listen, speaking of nuts behavior, there is so much that is happening and you are such a valuable, you and Ceci together are such a valuable resource to the Bravo community because there's so much that is said and sometimes manipulated on Bravo. It could be editing, it could be cast members themselves. When it comes to questions involving legal matters, lawsuits, God forbid, arrests. And so I couldn't more highly recommend that people follow you on Instagram. You really are my North Star, and certainly listen to the podcast. Aww. Because it's important and it's also valuable. And it shows to me, you know, there's always this thing around women-focused entertainment that it's assigned the label of a quote-unquote guilty pleasure when there's nothing that a person should feel guilty about in finding value about Housewives. And I just think because of your specific eye and your voices, that just does such a benefit to us in reinforcing that. Like, here are two really strong, impassioned, smart legal eagles who also love Bravo. I'm curious kind of for your thoughts in that and your perspective and journey as a Bravoholic.
Yeah, I mean, I used to be ashamed to admit that I watch Real Housewives. Like, I even told my husband, I was like, don't tell anyone that I'm watching this, you know, like it. And now Ceci and I have a podcast that's going to hit like 6 million downloads this year where it's all about us watching reality TV. And the thing is, Bravo fans are so smart. I would love to have a group of Bravo fans on my jury because they would parse through everything. And the people that watch these shows are not dumb. They're intelligent. And you're watching it and you're looking at the interpersonal dynamics. You're watching people connect. You're watching people be vulnerable. And the fans see through the artifice. They see when someone's self-producing. And you're absolutely right. It is not a guilty pleasure. You don't see men watching football, college football all weekend and being like, oh, it's my guilty pleasure. No, they just do it. Like, it's not. And how? And also, if you listen to sports radio, it is very similar. You know, they break down how they were feeling and their emotions and all of that. So I completely agree. It's not a guilty pleasure. But that's what you were talking about is also part of the reason why Ceci had the idea for the podcast and why I was posting legal essays on Reddit, because there's so much legal knowledge that should be accessible to everyone, but it's not. I mean, they don't even teach you really in high school, like, about your Fourth Amendment rights. And those are basic things that you have to deal with every day if you get pulled over by the police. So being able to use our law degrees for something that we're interested in just because we like doing it, and then also being able to share that knowledge with people and even explaining basic things like, here's how a deposition works, here's, you know, how discovery works. That has, we've gotten so many responses from people that's helped them. So it's just been really rewarding.
That's incredible. And I do have to ask, you know, I was missing something. Thinking about like the top biggest legal cases as storyline on Housewives, I think of three. And I'm sure I'm missing something big, so please fill it in. I think of Teresa and Juicy Joe. I think of Tom Girardi and the impact and involvement or whatever, however you want to call that, with Erica. And I think of Jen Shah. How do you think Bravo has done with not introducing these cases, but like with how the legal matters have been edited as storyline? Like, do you think Bravo has done an appropriate service to the audience, or have there been major pieces kinds of missing? How do you feel about that as a you know, Bravo docket legal superstar and a Bravo viewer?
Oh, you're so kind. I think Bravo has done, I mean, and I don't know behind the scenes, I can't speak to it, but I think Bravo has done an excellent job because there's a lot of shows and corporations and networks or whatever that wouldn't want anything to do with this because they don't want to get subpoenas for all of the unedited footage. They don't want their producers to be deposed or questioned. Did you see Jin Shah doing blah, blah, blah? You know, what did you see? And they continue on with these storylines. And with Teresa and Joe, I may have a slightly different perspective about that. Like, they broke the law, but also Teresa did her time. She went to jail. She did her time. She paid all of her legal fees. She paid her husband's legal fees. She paid her fines. And I think showing a redemption arc like that, and even if people don't like Teresa, I think you have to respect her for also going through all of that and staying strong for her children. You know, like, we see housewives and cast members crumble over the tiniest thing. Like, you sat in my chair, you ate the bow off my cake, whatever. And you're watching this woman who's got four young children, speaking of Teresa, you know, standing strong. And she didn't, she could have, you know, said, oh, I'll testify against my husband. She didn't. She kept her family together. And I think we should be kind of grateful to Bravo for sticking with that and allowing us to kind of continue to go on that journey, even with the legal stuff going on.
And with Erica, I don't know how to kind of make heads or tails of it at this point. And I know she still has some legal stuff ongoing.
Oh, she has a lot still. There's still a lot.
Can you kind of just give me a little bit of a Facebook status update?
Oh, man.
I know that's the impossible question. Like, and how long is this just going to be the rest of her life being engaged in lawsuits? I mean, that's kind of, you know, she married a criminal, or a man who became a criminal. So he's been criming for a while. Like, this is sort of, unfortunately, the cost of that. And also questions about, you know, her stuff.
I mean, we need to do an update episode on all of that. And I'm sure we will when Beverly Hills starts airing again. But I mean, Tom Girardi has been convicted. He's been found guilty. And the bankruptcies are still going on. And part of the reason for that is because stuff was so disorganized and commingled. And so they have to sort through with forensic accountants and go through everything. Like, you know, he had hundreds and thousands of clients, not hundreds of thousands, but like thousands of clients. And everything was a mess. The accounting was done very poorly from what we can tell and from what's been said in the bankruptcy court. So they have to sift through everything. And then there's so many creditors. And then because, you know, as we've talked about on our podcast, and as you know, the expenses, like, they're saying it for Erica Jane, they're saying those expenses were a loan. And then there's tax issues from that. And then there's what's actually part of the estate and what's not, like the earrings, for example, that whole saga. So that's probably still, to answer your question, going to be going on for a very long time. And that's not because the courts are slow. It's because it's just such a massive mess. I mean, the way I like to think about it is, imagine you took everything in your house and you dumped it all into one dumpster and then dumped it out and had to have somebody else sort through it. Like, that's like, you know, and organize it and decide where it should go back to or where it came from. That's what the bankruptcy courts are trying to do, essentially. And they have done a good job of getting a lot of people paid from what was there. So it's just a long process. And when you have someone willing to, you know, fight everything, I mean, this stuff over the earrings, I think almost everybody would have been like, I don't want those anywhere near my ears. Take them. You know, I don't want to deal with it. But when you have someone willing to fight tooth and nail and appeal and do all of that stuff, it does drag it out a lot longer. So that, you know, obviously Erica did not do the stuff Tom Girardi did. And we may never know how much she knew or didn't know or what she suspected. But what we do know now is that she is fighting a lot of things. And so that is partially her choice to still stay engaged in litigation.
There is also sort of, unfortunately, if you're an Erica, you know, if a viewer is an Erica fan, just so much damning information, some terrific journalism, most especially by the LA Times.
Oh, the LA Times has done an amazing job.
Incredible job. But a lot of stuff that like directly involves Erica, including that designer whose life she ruined by saying that he was inappropriately billing her for items she wore publicly. And then, you know, there's a two-parter. You think of the flashback from the Never Did I Ever two truths and a lie, where she's like, mm-hmm. well, I was an informant for something. And people are connecting those dots, thinking, I wonder if this was the case that she was an informant of, which feels not on the up and up. It just kind of, it impacts my opinion of her, obviously, when we hear allegations like that. How does that impact your experience at all or your potential enjoyment of Erica on the show? It might not.
I mean, I'm actually really glad that she was on the show, because I don't think this would have gotten the attention if she hadn't been. If she had just been someone not on reality TV, I think it maybe would have been a quick news story and people would have been like, oh, that's bad. But it wouldn't have gotten the attention that it has, because what Girardi did is so harmful to the entire legal community. I mean, it's not like people are like, oh, I love lawyers, they're the best. And then, but to have people, there are heroes in it that have been fighting for justice. And then to have it be so public, I think it's a good thing. Now, do I enjoy watching her? That's kind of an interesting question. I don't think a woman should ever be blamed for the crimes that a man committed. And I don't think that's right. And I don't think that should be put on her. But I do think it's fair to kind of criticize some of the behaviors that she's displayed and the lack of empathy. I think that's a very reasonable sort of response to some of the things that have occurred. As far as the question of does it affect how I watch her, I think it just makes me more interested to see how she's kind of changing her dynamic in a, because I've never been like a huge Erica fan, right? Like I have people that I just really, really like in general, like Shannon Bedore. I'm a big fan of Lisa Vanderpump. I freely admit those things, but like, I was kind of always ambivalent about Erica, and now it's just, I am interested to see what's going on. And I do think it's probably important that she stays in the spotlight so that that sort of light is still on there and we can all see, what's going on.
I also just kind of wonder, a tabloid broke this week, and who knows if this is accurate, but that Dorit and PK's $7.5 million LA mansion is in pre-foreclosure after they allegedly miss more than 4 months of payments. The thing that I have mentioned kind of briefly, but consistently on AG, is just a genuine level of confusion and frustration that Dorit has been on this show for 17,000 seasons, and we have never had a season that includes a considerable, appropriate amount of attention on speculation about their financial situation. Camille was like burned alive for saying, God forbid I've heard things and had a friend who maybe got a little fucked over. Like they lit her ass on fucking fire for that. So it is just one of those things. Like if I was Erica, regardless of how a person feels about her, I might feel a certain way that the show understandably is focusing on what a story that has national attention, extreme consequences for a number of victims, both of their original injuries and also of, God forbid, being a client of Tom Girardi. Like that deserves an appropriate amount of attention and conversation. But also, like, and I'm not equalizing it at all, it's just so wild to me that like Dorit flaunts labels like we have never seen ever before, and we've never really gotten into this.
Yeah, I think it sounds like this season of Beverly Hills is going to be heavily Dorit focused. So I'm very interested in watching that, because it sounds like this season we might actually get some like real, meaty stuff from Beverly Hills, as opposed to someone makes one comment and then the whole cast talks about it the whole time and it never gets shut down. And it's such a minor, ridiculous thing, like someone showing up late to meet with Teddy, So I think from what we're hearing, unless they're catfishing us, we're going to see some of that coming out. And I've always people are going to think this is weird for me to say, but I've always kind of, I kind of enjoyed Dorit and PK together. PK is very charming and he's someone that takes big risks. And when you take big risks, you are a bit of a gambler and you take some big hits. You know, I know Dorit can be annoying to a lot of people, but I've always thought she was smart and very interesting. So, you know, I can understand why Erica might be frustrated that there hasn't been as much attention on it. But also, Erica, like that would have been a national scandal with or without anything else. You know, you if you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at Girardi,
right?
Not at your cast members.
1,000%. And the fact that we still to this point, maybe we'll get it this season, but we still to this point have not seen Erica, I believe, not once express genuine, true anger at Tom. And I think that's probably very complicated, but it is also wild that we haven't seen her be like, huh, the reason I'm here is because of my husband and also because he really did do bad things. And I think a lot of her supporters say, well, she can't say that because of her. And it's just like, well, no, some of this has been proven in court. I mean,
no, I mean, it has been, I mean, and now he's been convicted of felonies. Like there's no innocent until proven guilty anymore. He has been proven guilty in a court of law, in federal court. Like it's, that happened. There's no denying that. So, you know, my big issue with Erica was when she was treating the audience like they were too stupid to figure things out, you know, making obvious statements that didn't make sense. And completely contradicted what she said before, and then acting like do not treat a Bravo audience like they are dumb, because they're not. They're not. And what really rubbed me the wrong way about her. But I mean, she's trying to soften her image now. And I also think she feels like she put in her time with Girardi. And so she feels like she went home to that man every day, listened to him, shut up when he told her to shut up. And she did time. For whatever, how long has she been? 22, 23? I can't remember now. Yeah, but like a couple decades.
Wrong there. Yeah.
And so I think she feels like I put the work in with this man and now I am owed this stuff and now I'm not getting it. And so it's not her thinking about, oh God, what has he done to other people? She's like, he screwed me over and this is unfair. And that's, I feel like, where a lot of her energy is coming from.
The number one thing that my mom wants is for me to connect with the son of a woman who sold her a couch. The number two thing she wants is for me to, obviously, give her a call and find a way to keep our memories close. So luckily, this holiday season, I have given her the gift of an Aura digital picture frame. It's another amazing way to stay in touch. I live in New York City. The fam lives in RI. And while my mom wants me to visit every day if I could, there are ways to keep us connected. And of course, I've been known to send my mom throwback pics of us, Jeff and I as kids, nights that my mom and I have had out here in New York when she's come to visit. And I know that those memories are meaningful. Aura Frames was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, and Fast Company said the simple, stylish digital picture frame can replace social media in your life. So the next time you need to call your mom, BCC the Tobes, you can also send her a new pic of you from that trip you're telling her all about right from your phone. For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com and get $45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames by using promo code AndysGirls at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code AndysGirls. This exclusive Black Friday Cyber Monday deal is their best of the year, so don't miss out. Terms and conditions apply. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? In the words of an unnamed former OG New York housewife, we support other women. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes our bodies go through. Perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. In the time before that time of the month, I don't feel like myself. I recognize a change in emotion after the fact, But during it, it's so difficult to understand what is different about the experience of being me that changes in a matter of days. The good news is we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com.
Speaking of energy, I'm not going to, I simply must circle back to the fact that you did just share that you are a hashtag stan of Shan. Now we are.
I really do like her. I really do.
She is my number one. She's my angel. She is America's broken bird. And I couldn't more firmly be a member of the 10-member Shan army, a thing I just coined just now. I think a Shan stan is an interesting Bravo-holic. I think we just have a sense of humor about life. Because, you know, it's just a part of the journey.
Well, I think she's the most authentic. She wears her heart on her sleeve. She's so authentic and she is so vulnerable. And she also admits when she's wrong. And I really do, Jen, like we're seeing on this season when, you know, Gina is like, well, when Shannon apologizes and is trying to do, I believe her. And as viewers, that's what we want to see. We don't mind some delusion. We don't mind some nonsense. We don't mind some cattiness, but we want to see vulnerability and we want to see these people be human and evolve. And I think that's part of the issue of, you know, I think sometimes the other cast members on the show don't understand, like, why is everyone always taking Shannon's side? It's because we see her as very authentic. You know, it's like, she's very authentic with her emotions and she's not self-producing. So I think that's why.
I couldn't more strongly agree. surprisingly, I'm 100% on board. And the question of authenticity is interesting because I think, you know, Tamra's doing this different kind of strategy in the reunion, which is like,
yeah,
I'm calmer now. I understand. I'm still saying shitty things, but I'm doing so softly instead of screaming. And I just have to wonder to myself, like, people are complicated, but like, which Tamra is the authentic Tamra? Or have we not seen authentic Tamra yet? What's your perspective on that?
I feel like with Tamra, she goes hard and she treats Real Housewives like a job. I think that's part of people's problem with her. Like, she's like, oh, I can get attention if I scream and yell. And she knows people will pay attention to it and people will talk about her. And I think she kind of feels like all's fair in war and reality TV. So we're here to put on a show. I'm going to put on a show. And I think that's where a lot of her stuff comes from. I don't want to judge anyone, say they're a good or bad person, but I think it seems to me like her intent is I'm going to put on a show and show up and do and scream and yell and dig up dirt and do all the things and, you know, state my opinions and all of that. But it doesn't, if she would dial it back some and just be a little bit less trying to make a scene happen, I think people would like it a lot better. I think because she treats it as a job and she is like, I go to work. And then she doesn't feel bad. She's like, this is what we're here to do. We're here to go to work. So I don't, you know, that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Yeah. And the difficulty is part of the job of working here is establishing stakes with friendship. Mm-hmm. So like if we don't feel that any kind of connection or lack thereof between Shannon and Tamara is genuine, then that just might be the new reality. But like, don't attempt to present to us some sort of healing journey next season.
Healing.
That is kind of, for real though. Like if that is not authentic, or do that, but you're going to get a lot of feedback from people who might resent it. Because I do think this season was, I mean, Tamara might not love this, but I do think it was a breakthrough season. It felt like Shannon, for the very first time, was putting up real, sincere boundaries and just had, maybe for the first time, the majority of the audience behind her.
And I mean, and we're all cheering her on, because seeing her stand up for herself and seeing her, you know, be like, I'm not going to repeat these patterns. I'm not going to just jump into another relationship. I am not going to let you just walk all over me. I am not going to let John Jansen, you know, force me into doing something I don't want to do. I think that's so great to see. And that's why we're responding that way.
Yeah. And speaking of Johnny J, I guess they're moving forward with a jury trial.
That's going to be interesting. So we do want to do an update on that episode. Since we covered it before, we haven't dug back into it to see what other pleadings have been filed. But that's, so I can't speak to the current state of that case. But yet I did see that they have, you know, went ahead and set it for trial, and they've asked for a jury trial. And man, I really hope Ceci can attend if that happens, since she's in LA.
I literally was like, should I just spend a couple times? Should I spend a couple days there? I was there. I covered Jen Shaw's sentencing for the Daily Beast. I do love a trip. I don't know that I might try to cameo at one point if I happen to magically be on the East Coast. So, and regardless, Ceci's coverage would be phenomenal. I just don't understand what this man is doing. And like, if he wins, does that mean she would have to cover his court costs in addition to a potential judgment? Like, what are we even talking about when it comes to the fees associated with this shit show?
I don't want to talk about the like rules in California, because I'm not licensed there, but I can say, you know, typically in the United States, there's only very limited cases where you can get attorney's fees. And some of those are civil rights actions, which this is not. I know in SLAPP actions, in California, you can get attorney's fees, because Shannon got those before. And I can't really answer that question too much. But as far as like what he's trying to do, it's completely backfiring. Like, he obviously didn't speak to any PR people, because if John Jansen had just stayed quiet and said, hey, you know, I put out a statement or something and said, hey, I wish Shannon the best. She owes me this money. It would be great if she paid me back, blah, 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 blah. But I am bowing out of this, and I never wanted to be in the public eye. People would then be like, oh, Shannon, that's ridiculous. Why didn't you pay him back for that? Blah, blah, blah. Like, if he wanted to make himself look good, a lawsuit was not the way to do it. And a lawsuit plus dating Alexis and having her be his mouthpiece. Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't really have strong feelings about him one way or the other, but now, because of his actions, I am like, this guy is terrible. So I don't know what his plan was or how he thought that was going to work out.
I just don't understand the tripling down. It's like, they either see the huge audience revolt as some sort of challenge, or they think we're so on the right side that like history will clean up our act for us, or people will understand that they're wrong. But it's like, if in the words of Heather Dubrow, and apparently also Tamara, if everyone is telling you you're dead, it's time to lie down. I don't understand why they're still not lying down. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. They didn't include, like, I was actually surprised reading the complaint that John Jansen filed, because he had to have known that this was going to get picked up and discussed because of Housewives. And he didn't include any. He's like, oh, I have evidence that she did say this was a loan, but he didn't screenshot it in the complaint, which you can do. And he didn't include it as an attachment, which you can do. And so if you are going to file a lawsuit like that and then wait until filming has started to file the lawsuit to make sure that it gets brought up, why not go ahead and attach to your initial pleading this supposed evidence that you have? Like, I haven't seen that yet. And you know what? Maybe it was a loan. Maybe he was right. But if his goal is good PR, this still isn't working, especially when Shannon can say, hey, I offered you the full amount in a mutual non-disparagement, which just, I wanted to bring this up and I was glad we were talking about this today. That is absolutely standard practice in every settlement agreement, every single one. And it's standard practice to not disclose the amount of the settlement. It's standard practice to say, you know, neither side is admitting fault in the settlement, and a mutual that's totally reasonable and normal. That isn't an unusual thing to ask for. And if he really wanted his money, why wouldn't he just sign that? If that's what this was really about, like, why wouldn't he just sign that and take the money? Like, and the only person that wins is his lawyers in this situation because he has to pay them. So I don't get it.
It really genuinely sucks for Shannon because, I mean, at the end of the day, this was someone, Lord knows the flashbacks have done a lot of the heavy lifting, but this was someone she thought she was going to be with forever. He loved her day one. We've seen all the clips. They were together for several years. Even after they broke up, they were still shtupping. And I don't know, to just be treated in this manner by someone with such strong passion toward publicly hating you and saying that you're a bad person. We can't say enough about how shitty Tamara has been for using quote unquote, you're a drunk as a pejorative. But look at what this man has done, who she thought was going to be her happily ever after. I mean, I just don't understand why Alexis is looking at this and thinking, well, God, he's such a Prince Charming. How do you have such a lack of self-awareness that you don't see this as a pattern? Once you know that, because I know they're never going to break up because they'll be in love forever, but this is what this man has capacity to do. Why doesn't that impact you in any way?
I mean, one thing I've learned from my friends with family law practices and I have to put myself here too, everyone is stupid about love. Like no one, even the smartest, most reasonable, logical person, once relationship feelings get into it, can start to act irrationally. And I don't know, we don't know what John Jansen has said to Alexis. We don't know, obviously she wanted to get back on the show but we don't know what he's said to her, and we don't know what's going on there really. But I don't want to judge anybody for dating the wrong person, but I agree that it seems absolutely insane. And then to like watch this season back and say, be like, see all the clips of where he said the exact same thing to Shannon that he's saying to you, I would be really struggling with it at that point. And then to your point, I would be like, okay, I've seen it on TV now. I literally one clip right after the other of him saying the exact same thing. This may be a pattern. Maybe this was a terrible idea. That's the other thing. Like, we all make silly decisions in relationships, but very few of us get to see it played back out on TV months later and then kind of look at it then. So at that point, I'm like, maybe you should be triple thinking this and questioning some of your decisions here, Alexis.
Yeah, I would have more empathy for her if she wasn't being such a fucking asshole and thinking that the loudest voice is right. It's actually wild, and it's so unfortunate, because when they said she was coming back, and I believe everything that she has said, that Andy has said about the fact that this was certainly underway before she had a run-in with Johnny J at The Quiet Woman, like that just seems to be a matter of fact at this point, that like, yes, that was happening before this. It certainly sweetened the pot for production and John.
Right. What doesn't make sense to me from like a timeline standpoint is like, okay, so Andy's confirmed, we agree that they were already trying to get Alexis back on the show, or that was already in the works. But if John Jansen was really so upset about being in the public eye or being on TV, you would think that that would be like, okay, well, I'm not comfortable dating. I've already done this once. I feel like I got burned. I'm not comfortable dating someone else that wants to go back on the show. But instead, it's like, oh, look, here's my, I can use Alexis as my PR person and then still make appearances on the show. Why is he agreeing to film? Like, what's going on? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And then she holds strong to the fact that he, I guess, offered her double her, what she was being offered as a, to stay off camera, which is just a weird thing to suggest.
I wonder how much she, I'm curious about that from the, cause I know they get paid very little. Yeah. It's like $7,000 an episode, like in the beginning, and then you get paid more and more. So like him offering to pay her double with her coming back on, like, is she starting, and she's like technically a friend of still. So is she getting double of what is what I want to know. Cause that's that may be meaningless. Yeah.
That's absolutely a valid point. And it's just so unfortunate that they can't just take a fucking second and think about this, or worst case scenario, they have. And this is what they've landed on, is that he is the ultimate victim of his relationship, which isn't calling into question, as you said, whether or not Shannon considered this alone. Like, that to me, she has offered to repay him in full the latest discounted number from 75 to 70. He refused it because he doesn't want to be able to stop talking, which is so ironic when you think of what Shannon has said about his intentions, which is to somehow gain control.
Yeah, that's frustrating because Shannon was obviously in the last season, Shannon was trying so hard. And that's what she was having meltdowns about. Like, she didn't want it on the show. And it was the other women bringing it up. It, especially Tamra bringing it up. Like, if he's mad at anybody, it should be Tamra, because she's the one that was, you know, kept, and Shannon was trying so hard to keep it contained, and she was crying, and she's like, he's gonna break up with me if this is on the show. Like, she obviously felt all of this pressure that didn't help, and with the other women bringing it up, that is a, you know, like, that wasn't even Shannon being like, I'm gonna make him look bad. It, she was trying not to, which is the other frustrating thing to watch.
Yeah. And at a certain point, I'm like, can somebody get involved in this and be like, this is like too much? Like, it's too much for this woman to bear. Like, I think about her during that spa retreat weekend when Gina's like, okay, you know, someone needs to tell her, and just her reactions to stuff. She really became undone. And I just think the stress of filming these shows is so intense.
Oh,
plus
yeah,
her taking responsibility and accountability for the DUI and like trying to navigate that path, and also understand there are people on the show who don't want well for her, who don't want to see her do well. And I think that, plus, you know, like the post DUI stuff, the just general filming stuff, the Tamra and Alexis of it all, and also this man who won't leave her alone and is now getting camera time doing exactly that, because when he's not on camera and Alexis is, he's still on camera. It just has to be really overwhelming. And I think she, you know, not just because I'm a stan of Shan, although could just be that, I think she deserves a lot of credit. And it's I don't know. It's just, it's frustrating. But I also wonder, like, would you like to see Alexis back? Would you like to see her back as a friend of? Would you like to see her back full time? Do you think she's going to return at all?
I mean, I just think that her whole story this season and everything about her was about John Jansen and Shannon. And it's like, that's boring. That, you know what I mean? Like, no one's really interested in that. So if she has something else going on that she can be authentic about and share, then I think that would be interesting. Or, you know, maybe they get married and then that doesn't work out very quickly. Mm-hmm. I could see, you know, viewers being entertained by that, but I don't really have strong feelings about, I feel like I don't know who Alexis is. I, you know, RHOC had been going on for so long before I really got invested in Housewives during COVID and then binge watched everything. But there's still like some of the beginning seasons where Alexis was on where I haven't been able to go back and watch all of it. So I really only know her from appearing on this season and her behavior here. And I'm just kind of like, conflict is easy. That's like the lowest common denominator. And I think longtime housewives tend to kind of default to that because it's easy to create conflict. It's much more difficult to have an authentic friendship on camera. It's much more difficult to have authentic fun on camera. That is harder to maintain and to do. And so they start defaulting to just, what's the most conflict I can create? And yes, conflict is an inherent part of every story. That's what makes things interesting. But when it's just over and over again, you kind of get less interested in it. And that's what we saw with Alexis and John Jansen. It's the same thing over and over and over again. It's like there's no evolving. There's their characters aren't fully, and who they are isn't just fully developed. It's just it's one note. That's a way to put it. Like they are just kind of one note individuals with one agenda. And I don't think that's that interesting for viewers.
Meanwhile, someone who I think is incredibly interesting is Jen Pedranti, who has gone through so many challenges. I thought on part two, she fucking killed it. She found her voice. Obviously, we saw that this season. And I sort of hate that phrase, too, because I think also people communicate in different ways. And like she always had a voice. It was just a question of how she expressed it. But I think that we've seen her. I don't know. The way she was challenging what was being said to her on part two, and she wouldn't let things go in the best possible way. She would like have follow-ups. You could obviously see some anger in her, some frustration, some confusion, some, you know, maybe sadness-y stuff at points. The way that she has navigated all of this shit with her piece of shit ex-husband or soon to be ex-husband or whatever the fuck, I think, you know, I just personally think like kudos to you for attempting to co-parent with this man while you're still fighting to receive an amount of money that is owed to you to provide for your kids. I also think like this Ryan stuff is, I think, probably complicated for her. I just personally wish she was more curious about some of the dealings here. Tell me your thoughts.
So with the Ryan thing, I mean, I don't know. This is pure speculation, but he hasn't been charged with anything. And I do know that before the feds charge anyone with anything, they absolutely make sure that they have all the evidence they need first. That's why they have such a high conviction rate. So they don't just like, typically in like state crimes and other things like that, the crime happens and then they're trying to figure it out and figure out who did it and put it all together. The feds are paying attention beforehand, gathering evidence, and then they do the charges. So my personal theory is that either the feds approached Ryan and asked him to, because they wanted to catch the bookie, and asked him to like arrange for this to occur so that they could catch the other guy. And so then he was a confidential informant and part of it from the very beginning, but at the direction of the feds. Or Ryan realized that there was something going on and he got an attorney and was like, hey, I have a proffer of what's going on. And obviously he doesn't want to say that he sold his friend out, but Jen seems so not worried about it. And Ryan seems so not worried about it that, and it's been reported that he has immunity. So one way or other, I think he did get that. Because he also could have, the feds could have come to him and say, we have questions about this. And he could have been like, I will tell you everything as long as I have full immunity. Because they don't seem super concerned. Again, that doesn't mean that he has paid taxes on everything and he may not have an issue there. But, you know, I fully believe because of the way things are being presented and what's being reported, and because he hasn't been charged, that he does have some kind of immunity. I do think that if Ryan's been going through all of this long enough, he has legal representation and is, I think she would have been told to not say anything at all at the reunion, just say it's a legal matter. I can't discuss it if they were concerned. Now, I don't know. This is all me. This is pure speculation on my part. But we don't know that Ryan actually broke any laws, and we don't know that he doesn't have full immunity for whatever, and we don't know the extent of his cooperation, and we just don't know. But what we do know is that the bookie pled guilty and has, you know, is going to serve his jail time, and Ryan is still out. So, and hasn't been charged. That's what we do know. But as far as Jen, I really think she's an example of, look, you can be nice and fun and still be interesting. Like, you don't have to just attack all the time.
Do you like free stuff? Well, you're in luck because Buy Optimizer's Black Friday deal starts now, and they are giving away free gifts with purchase. That's right. I have an exclusive advance invite to Buy Optimizer's Black Friday deal for the entire month of November. This is their best sale of the entire year. If you're feeling stressed out or haven't been sleeping well lately, you are not alone. You might not be able to change all the chaos out there, but you can start supplementing with one key nutrient to improve your sleep quality, as well as over 600 other biochemical reactions in your body. Magnesium Breakthrough is the only product I've found that has all the magnesium forms in one convenient bottle. You'll open less bottles, spend less money, and still get the top 7 forms of magnesium for better sleep, manage stress, balance hormones, improve mood, feel refreshed, all in one bottle. You can only get this exclusive deal through my link special for AGs. Go to buyoptimizers.com/andysgirls and use code andysgirls to get your discount and free gifts today. And one last thing you should all know, all Buy Optimizer supplements are best in class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund up to 1 year after your purchase, no questions asked. Again, the link to go right now for the exclusive code is buyoptimizers.com/andysgirls using code andysgirls.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That was a very long rambling answer. So I hope that
it wasn't rambling at all. Okay. Literally wasn't rambling at all. And I feel like people sometimes misinterpret a person being quiet for thinking that they're weak, which is completely, to me, one has nothing to do with the other. And I think we have seen evidence of Jen's strength. I think there is also, though, a hope that because she has been through experiences where she wasn't well informed of like financial stuff, maybe it was because her ex was hiding it from her or whatever, that she was surprised by, you know, by being evicted from the house that she was renting, by like, you know, different things that have happened to her that have impacted her lifestyle, let's say, and potential quality of life. Like, there's just a hope that I have that maybe I'm placing upon her that she would feel similarly that to what I feel, which is really unfair, that like if someone I love and I'm planning to spend the rest of my life with is involved in some way in some sort of legal thing, he hasn't been charged with anything. She has said that he has immunity, that he has volunteered information, that he's the one that contacted XYZ. I get that, but that she would be more curious about what the actual situation is.
She could be smarter than we think she is, right? I mean, she could be a lot smarter than we think. We've seen her lead with kindness. Mm-hmm. And I think people have been quick. I mean, she looks like Barbie. She's got, you know, she's stunning, super blonde, very sweet. And we don't know. She could be smarter than we think she is. And we just don't know. So I can't say that one way or the other. I mean, I made a joke in the episode we covered it, like, Jen, you in danger, girl. But now more time has come along. He still hasn't been charged. And they seem so nonplussed about it. Like, it just very, you know, blasé. So I think Jen might be smarter than we're giving her credit for. But I also understand why Gina was frustrated with her, especially after this latest episode that we did on Gina and Travis. So I think I understand from the outside perspective, but we also don't know about her ex either, like Jen's ex. Like, we don't have his side of the story. We only have one side of the story from Jen. And I'm not saying Jen's lying or whatever else, but we don't know what's going on for real there either. So
that's a good point. The Gina Travis of it all makes me so fucking sad. And to hear how upset her kids are and like this legal situation involving his ex. I mean, I need to listen to that episode. I can only go off of, until this point, what I've seen on the show. as far as how Gina's presented it. Has that been consistent with what you've found about the filings, dealings between Travis and his ex?
Yeah, I mean, I had had some of those filings from way before when stuff came, you know, very briefly came up about their situation like one or two seasons ago. But we didn't talk about it or do an episode on it or mention it, because at that point, I didn't have any evidence that, you know, the ex-wife was trying to make things public. And it really wasn't that much of a storyline on the show. And, you know, it is divorce pleading. So I was like, you can just let this sit here. But then this season, when, you know, she's moving out and people were starting to really criticize her for why she was moving out, and she continued to hold her tongue and not use her platform. And then we saw that the ex-wife was doing these posts and tagging them and tagging RHOC. I was just kind of like, and then Travis was being so pouty about her moving out and acting like he didn't understand why she was doing it. I was like, okay, well, this is part of the storyline now. And these are public filings. Obviously, even though they don't redact the children's names, we will never mention them. But now I'm just kind of like, I said this in the episode, but I have more respect for Gina after reading all of this than I did before. And I think this is the first time that I have read legal pleadings involving a housewife where I've had more respect for them after reading the pleadings. I mean, Gina has put up with a lot and been put in a very, very difficult situation. And she has been so reasonable throughout all of it and has not used her platform or weaponized it in any way or really engaged in some of the retaliatory behaviors that she could have with the resources that she has and the, you know, the national attention. So I was very impressed with Gina from that. And just what she's been through and how she's been taking care of everyone and trying so hard. And she just put in a no-win. That's a no-win situation when you have something like that going on. This is, moving out was absolutely the right thing to do. And Travis knows it was the right thing to do because he saw everything that's going on. His ex-wife, Gina didn't marry her. Travis did. So he needs to get that sorted and let Gina live her life and be grateful that she has worked so hard to work through all of this. I mean, I can't imagine having that kind of relationship with somebody and then having their ex, you know, and them still be so litigious and being on like one of the longest running, most well-known reality shows of all time. Like that is just a lot. That's a lot. Like, and I respect Gina for being so reasonable about it and for not weaponizing any of the resources that she has.
How unfortunate that he was like playing like, I don't know why this is happening, but I wonder if some of that was, I don't know if there was like a production or something, or maybe he really genuinely doesn't understand it. Maybe he really genuinely feels like, I don't get why he knows the details of what he's going through, obviously with his ex, but maybe he feels like, I just strongly disagree with this decision.
Oh, I'm sure he disagrees with it. I'm sure, but when you listen to the episode, I think you'll probably come to the same conclusion that I did after you listen to the episode, because it's I'm like, dude, you know exactly why.
Yeah. And I think, yeah. I mean, I think the thing with Gina is I do think that comes from her having like a strong moral compass, and she does have I think she actively displays grace in a way that I really appreciate it, especially at points where she really doesn't need to. That's when you really see a person's character. But the thing that makes me sad is I also think a big part of this comes from fear. And this woman has been through so fucking much. Mm-hmm. And I just think as a protective mama bear, as someone who has, we've seen her become so independent, which I love, you know, she's trying to protect herself, protect her kids, but also like, with whatever is going on, it just makes me sad to think about the fact that some of this might be coming from a place of understandable fear. I really feel for her. I really genuinely feel for her. And I've truly grown to respect her in a way that I'm thankful she's on the show. I really genuinely am. Listen, yeah. Before we wrap, I have one more question for you. Because the introduction of this court case against Katie from a decade ago was connected in Emily and Heather's thinking of this is going to show that this woman's character is like somehow is potentially inconsistent. I'm curious for your thoughts on them bringing up the In Touch article, which is about a road rage incident from literally a decade ago. How do you feel about that as an attorney, as a Bravo viewer, of them introducing this legal case, which, yes, was on In Touch, but was never a part of the show?
I mean, I think it was woefully ineffective. And I will just speak about it from a legal perspective. Like in court, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, there's, you know, you typically cannot bring up prior bad acts to show consistency with current behavior, right? And but one of the times where you can is if someone's committed a felony for making a false statement or dishonesty. Now, if Katie had been convicted of making a false statement to law enforcement, then I think maybe that would be fair. It's a conviction. And yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with this, but it's like, look, you've got caught for lying to the police. So why should we believe you now? I mean, I still think it's 10 years ago. That's pretty tenuous, but I probably wouldn't have had the same reaction to it I did. But here, there has been no determination one way or the other of who was right, who was wrong, and what the facts are. There's a police report. There's two lawsuits, but never once has Katie really gotten a chance to tell her whole side of the story under oath. And there's never been, to use Heather's favorite word, an adjudication or a judicial determination of who was telling the truth in that road rage incident. So in the federal case that they did not sue Katie in, and they just sued the county and the individual law enforcement officers. So he sued them in their official capacity, which is like suing the government entity. And then he sued them in their individual capacities. So I also didn't see any mention of a taser in any of the pleadings or the police report. Yeah, I didn't see any. And I have his deposition, too, and he never talked about being tased. So I don't know where that came from, that he was tased, but I never saw that in any of the pleadings anywhere. And it really is like when they arrested him, it was because he wasn't complying with their demands and going back to his van. And that seemed, and he admitted even in his own deposition that he had been asked at least 5 times to get back in his van.
Whoa.
And what's kind of frustrating here is that I think probably both parties made some bad decisions that day. You know, from reading what I read, I don't think she had any idea that he pulled over where his house was. I don't think she, you know, and from what she has said and he has said, both in the police report and then in his deposition that I read, is that he did get out of the car at one point and go behind her car because her car was behind his. And so when she called the police, she's like, he's behind my car. He's not letting me leave. And then the police are like, just stay there. We'll wait there. But then, you know, was he actually like not letting her leave? She may have felt that way when he was behind her car when she called the police. And then I think there was a bit of a language barrier. So in the incident report where it shows the log of what was called in, she called him Russian. She thought he was Russian. And then when he was deposed, he talked about being Brazilian. But there's never been like an actual determination of who was at fault. And the police did the right thing, I believe. And then they got punished for it. So like they had him in the car for obstruction. Then they let him look at the video. Or, you know, he was like, oh, here's the code to my phone. When he's in the police car, you can look at the videos on my phone. And in his deposition, when they were asking him, they were like, well, did you record anything beforehand? So we still don't know what happened before they both got out of their cars. Like, that's not on video. There isn't videos of that. But the police were like, okay, well, she may have been the primary aggressor here. And so they only charged him with obstruction and they didn't charge him with any of the other things. And the reason they only charged him with obstruction was because they're like, we really can't determine for a fact. And we think she may have been the primary aggressor. Now, should she have gotten out of her car and yelled at him? No. Should he have gotten out of his car and yelled at her? No. Should he have, you know, been doing anything and trying to record her while he was driving because he thought she was texting? No. No, like there's no there shouldn't have been any type of citizens intervention here. It's just call the police and let them deal with it. So I think both people probably made poor choices 10 years ago. Do I think it's reasonable this was brought up on the show? No, I do not. Like this had nothing to do with RHOC in 2024. Absolutely nothing. And it doesn't prove that Katie's a liar. And it doesn't prove that the gentleman involved in the road rage incident is a liar. All it does is like, Eric, there's some evidence that both sides made some poor choices 10 years ago. It should never have been brought up.
Yeah. And it's just one of those things, like the thing that I was stuck on initially when I read the In Touch piece that was also included in the police officer's report, which you posted on Instagram, which I referenced on that recent like OC follow-up episode of AG was I didn't understand her saying at the reunion, like, I didn't follow him in any way, when the police officer is noting, if you want to believe the police officer, which is a valid question, but is noting that like her car was parked behind his and that mm-hmm. it was outside of his residence, which does not make sense when you think about Katie's explanation that he then followed her and she like pulled in somewhere. But also, like, as you said very clearly just now, and also in that Instagram post, this is something that happened a decade ago. And also, there might be, if you think about it genuinely, and she wasn't under oath when this happened, she certainly wasn't when she's filming Orange County. Otherwise, everyone would be in jail, honestly.
Right.
Like, truly. But like, every people have fucked up and made mistakes. And you, if I'm being judged for the worst decision that I ever made and people are asking me questions, first off, I may not feel like they are owed the truth in the matter. That's number one. And number two, like, people genuinely make mistakes. She might have, it might have been an incident of road rage. This man is screaming at her. She's like, how fucking dare you say that to me? Whatever else. They get into a thing. Like, I don't know. I don't like the idea of this being, while I am certainly became distracted and curious about the case because it was just like,
right,
new information coming to me as a viewer. Yeah. Like, what's happening? It is also one of those situations. I don't know. I think Emily should know that more than anyone else as a lawyer through her work with the Innocence Center, that there can be a lot of variables at play. Do you really want to judge someone against a police officer report, which she didn't have access to at this point, and this man's word, who has obviously in his mind a vendetta and a reason to paint her in the most absolutely negative light? It's like, you should know this, meaning Emily, as a lawyer coming into this dynamic.
I mean, and I was cheeky in the end of the Instagram post because I like to reward people for reading all the texts when they get to the end. So I made that little cheeky post, like saying these documents were harder to find than the paparazzi at Disneyland on a Saturday. But I actually don't think Heather Dubrow, this is my personal opinion, I have no evidence either way, I don't think Heather actually did all that stuff or had somebody look it up. If I was going to guess and speculate, maybe it was the guy that wants to collect the judgment, you know, from that road rage incident that sent that information. Because if you saw someone that owed you money and then saw them on reality TV, and then you're like, oh, well, I have all these documents right here, let me just send this on over and get this information out. Like, I don't. And as far as Heather with the paparazzi, I think the paparazzi were probably there for someone else. And maybe they saw Heather, or maybe she had it. I mean, does it matter? I do think her and Terry are happy and fine. It's so silly. But as far as the road rage incident, it's just frustrating because no one's ever going to really know. There was no final determination of what happened in a court of law. The federal case, the cops won and the county won summary judgment for their official capacities. And then in their individual capacities, they settled. That doesn't mean anyone admitted fault. That doesn't mean that anyone got paid. That doesn't mean anything. So you don't, and we will never know because it's confidential. So we will never know with that. And there was no determination. I think it's so silly that it got brought up. And as far as Emily, I mean, Emily's human too, right? So I think you're probably, looks like it was at the beginning of the reunion. Everybody's amped up and they read this article and she's like, you know what? She is a liar. She lied to the police, blah, 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 blah. I just think they went too hard and did too much. But that doesn't, you know, I don't think that makes Emily a bad lawyer or a bad person either. It's like she went too hard one day on something that she probably shouldn't have talked about. But we've all probably done that.
Yeah, I absolutely totally agree. And I do think with the paparazzi thing, here's just my latest hypothesis. I absolutely do not think that they contacted. I thought Katie's quote unquote receipt was a joke. Like, someone texting you, yes, that's not a receipt.
Right.
Like, give me a receipt of like how she contacted them and like what happened. But I do think it's possible paparazzi was already there. They saw Heather and Terry. And here's the addendum to that. Here's my little asterisk. Ooh. It is possible. It might be like a wide frame lens, yada, yada, wide angle lens, whatever, that they didn't see the paparazzi person. It's also possible that if they saw somebody taking a photo of them, they maybe would do a cheeky little pose.
Right.
I think that's entirely possible because just the way they're holding each other is awkward. It does look like, and this is not Heather's fault at all, but it does look like we're kind of like doing a sassy little thing because we see someone taking our photo. That's what any number of people would probably do. I think that's a possibility, but it's also, at the end of the day, if the question, oh, God bless Katie, you know, great first season housewife, some of this stuff, and she's been saying, I think, that there's like more proof of the paparazzi thing, which does not, why? I don't think,
yeah.
You're telling us this was the receipt and you made that your headline. What other evidence do you have? Why didn't you present it? I've heard that line from housewives before, especially new housewives, of like, they didn't show it all or I have more. It's like, well, then instead of telling us that, show it. Because to just dangle the carrot that we're still supposed to exist in gray when so many of us truly don't care at this point is manipulative. I don't love it.
Well, I thought it was so weird. I mean, I think Heather's smart, and I thought it was very odd that she took the bait, right? What's the worst thing that can happen to a first season housewife? That they're boring and they have no storyline. And if by Heather taking the bait and getting so, I mean, she could have just laughed it off and been like, that's silly, or maybe we did, or, you know, like been cute about it and no one would have thought a second over it. But this now has become this whole storyline that ends up with, you know, viewers believing that Heather and Emily dug up all this stuff to attack Katie because of the paparazzi thing, because that's the only reason that really Heather is shown for why she dislikes Katie. So I'm surprised that Heather kind of took the bait for that, because it's like that you just made it into a whole thing and you and Terry seem very happy. I mean, that's one of the few marriages where I'm like, I think they genuinely like each other. And it's like, why take the bait? You're smart, Heather. Like, the worst thing you can do to somebody is make them boring. And, you know, this just gave Katie like a whole storyline and everything else. And there was Sutton involved and like all like, and we're still talking about it because she got so upset, because Heather got so upset.
This is the thing that she won't understand, but like, you should thank Katie. Like, it got you fired up. You were a dick, but like, you performed. Like, you should thank this woman. I don't think you guys want to fuck with each other even a little bit, which makes me feel great for next season. Like, you know, there's no question in my mind Katie should be back 1,000%.
Do you think she's going to come back?
They would be nuts. Like, there have been so many bad one and dones. I think Katie makes a lot of sense on the show. I think there are genuine questions because I think some of her stuff is inconsistent. So come back, explain it or not. Like, I think she is great casting. I also love her friendship with Jen. It's not so close that they parrot each other. I think that they still have some like dot, dot, dots here with, you know, whatever you choose to do, whatever you choose to do, which is great. There's some mutual respect and they're not just copycatting. I couldn't keep the cast exactly the way it is. Alexis is to be determined.
See, I also really like Jen because she didn't attack Katie. It's like, you know, this totally new person where it is making her be like insecure, like, am I going to be on the show, whatever, blah blah blah. I like to see that they've kind of created a connection. I actually, this might be a hot take, but I would actually love to see Heather on Beverly Hills. I would actually enjoy Heather on Beverly Hills, and I know most people disagree with that, but I think that would be fun to see.
You know what? We might actually be reaching that point, because she has her head. It's not even that she has her head stuck up Tamara's ass. It's like, I think she sort of doesn't care at this point. There are certain things that she's not invested in when I need her to be invested. And some of the Tamara friendship gets into that area where I'm like, ooh, I wish I felt like Heather had her own opinion, because she's someone who is obviously very opinionated. And that's not me like wanting her to have my opinion. It's me wanting her to care a little bit more about stuff that doesn't directly involve her.
She doesn't like really fit in. She's so much more wealthy than all of these other women and runs really in different circles. So I feel like Heather is kind of feels like she's going to the zoo when she's filming with them. Like, she's at the zoo with the zoo animals, and then she just gets to leave the zoo and go back to her, you know, whatever fancy house she's living in at the time. Whereas I think, you know, she would be a fun one to go toe to toe with Kyle Richards or someone else. Like, you know, I just think that would be much more interesting to watch.
I actually genuinely agree, even though if she stayed on Orange County, I would be completely fine with that. But I would be curious about Beverly Hills. And I think, like, I like watching Heather on the show. There are seasons where I enjoy and appreciate her. Sometimes it's throughout the season where it's like I might agree with her on certain stuff, appreciate the way she's communicating things, think she's obnoxious AF, coming across as like elitist at points in a way that isn't as fun, but still elicits a reaction. And that could be interesting on Beverly Hills. That really genuinely could. But I
don't, it could.
I'm okay with her staying on Orange County. I really am.
No, I agree.
Yeah. If Beverly Hills, but she would need to be mad at someone. So I don't want her to just like come to Beverly Hills and be like, this is so nice. Everyone seems like they have money, even if they don't. And we can all go shopping together every day of our lives. Like, but there's also more to Heather than that. It's not just someone who has, you know, a very big wad of cash. Like, there's other stuff here and we're just not seeing as much of it. And maybe it's because she's too comfortable. Maybe it's other stuff. But that would be great. That really, but also she really hates Katie. That's a great reason to keep her on Orange County. They do not like each other. Genuinely. Good for us. Good.
I don't know
us.
If I want to subject Katie to that.
Well, Katie can carry her own. And I know that the reunion was tough because Emily has a lot of energy and Heather's been practicing in front of a mirror for a minute, which she really hasn't. She's just like a performer when it comes to certain stuff where she's like, I have a monologue, and which I can appreciate. But but Katie can hold her own. I think it was her first reunion and it was a lot of energy, but she came at Heather day one. This woman knows how to get the job done. I have absolute trust that Katie could amp this up. I just think maybe her examples were sort of lacking. Like the paparazzi thing, the Christmas thing, it happened off camera before the fact.
Oh, that's my other pet peeve. I hate storylines about things that happen off camera and storylines that involve social media. I hate it. I hate it so much. Like it to me, those are the most boring known, because like you can't ever figure out what really happened. And then it's like, I don't want to go back and look at someone's social media post from 3 months ago about why they were upset. Like, I hate it. I hate it.
I also don't love this whole introduction of podcasts in this way where it becomes about content creators and the relationships with Bravo.
Yeah. What is with all the content creators inserting themselves into Bravo, like for these ongoing seasons? We've got that happening in Salt Lake City. And then, you know, that's going on in Orange County with like, well, you said this on his podcast and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, it's just so much.
As a podcaster, no. I'm like, no, like we're our own little weird fucking environment. Like, you know, it's
The commingling. I do kind of like it.
Yeah.
Like separate, like we're in our, it's like, we're not the ones on the field. Just like when we're talking about sports radio. Like those guys do not need to get on the field and try to kick a field goal. Like they're on the sports talk radio. We are our own thing. We have our own sort of microcosm and we don't need to like commingle it quite so much.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Listen, this has been a total joy. I'm so thankful to you for coming on the pod. You are welcome back anytime. I look forward to listening to the Travis Gina recent episode of the Bravo Docket. Can you tell the AGs a little bit about where they can find you on social and what you've got cooking over at the Bravo Docket pod?
Yeah. So everywhere we're the Bravo Docket, Instagram, the Bravo Docket. We have a website, the Bravo Docket. Then you can listen to all of our episodes on anywhere that you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, anything else, just put in Bravo Docket and we will pop right up.
Incredible. And guys, listen, have you joined the Andy's Girls Patreon? Number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes like a brand new Satchel Spectacular featuring many of your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone. Patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Gally. And thanks so much for coming on. This was a total delight.
I had so much fun. I had been so immersed in just my normal, real legal work all day. It was such a nice... And Ceci's been so busy that I haven't been able to, like, you know, info dump on her. This was lovely. I'll come back anytime and chat Housewives with you.
Would love to have you. Shout out Ceci. And thanks to all of you for listening. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.